Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for the next in our series of draft countdowns. Today, looking at the interior offensive line, and joining me to do that is Chris Aguilera. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure, Chris. You did the offensive tackle series last year, and you were very high on Roger Rosengarten, who the Ravens ended up drafting. Had him higher than I did, and I assume didn't really think it was too much of a risk, a reach on draft night either, right?
Yeah, I thought he went in the perfect spot. You know, obviously it was a gamble that the Ravens were playing, and they were kind of nervous that they weren't going to get their guy. Luckily for them, it ended up happening, and they didn't get that other guy who
Suamataia,
and you know, they, it seems like they got the better guy. So hopefully they can have the same kind of luck this year.
I was very high on Suamataia. I'm glad you weren't alone. I'm glad the Ravens ended up getting Rosengarten based on how it worked out. Okay, so the interior offensive line, a little bit complicated. And it's complicated because the tackle position has some outstanding players who are probably going to kick inside. And they have others who probably could be good at either position. So Will Campbell strikes out as a guy who might be great at either position. So we've each taken a little different road in terms of where we include people. I understand, Chris, you did not include centers in your group. I've only got one center on my list, so I don't think it matters that much, but that's the way you did it, correct?
Correct, yeah.
All right. Well, I think maybe we talk about the Ravens situation here a little bit first, because the Ravens obviously coming into this draft, and my list is, by the way, built entirely on value to the Ravens, is where I think the Ravens should draft them. You know, how do they fit into their scheme? Do they make sense for them? Given the Ravens things they've fallen into in the past, is it someone the Ravens might draft? Is yours generally that way, or is it yours universal? Anybody could use this 10-to-1 list kind of thing.
No, mine is definitely with Ravens lenses on. I don't really care about other teams. I don't care how they rank players. I don't care how they see players. I'm just looking at these players based on where I think they would fit in with the Ravens.
All right. Sounds good, Chris. So the Ravens situation, I think most Ravens fans are less than happy with the current guard situation. I'm probably a little bit more optimistic about what's going on right now, but they have two less than spectacular incumbent guards in Voorhees and Faalele. Ben Cleveland, in a remarkable turn of events, is back with the Ravens, and in a perhaps more remarkable turn of events, is the Ravens' most versatile lineman. He actually comes in, I think, to this year as the new Patrick McCary.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, because at any time they've needed someone to be a starter, it seemed like they didn't trust him to take that role as being the guy to start, whether it was left guard or right guard. So it was a shock that they brought him back, because, like I said, it doesn't seem like they trust him very much to be a starter in any way. So the fact that they brought him back, I'm happy that the price of it now is just what kind of shape will he come in, and what kind of opportunity are they going to give him? Like, is he really going to battle, or is he just going to be that guy who's going to, you know, just break glass in case of emergency type of guy?
Yeah, if he is that guy, he should get some significant playing time this year, because McCary did last, and the Ravens still had a very terrific line continuity last year. They had probably the best in the NFL in terms of keeping their guys together and healthy and
finally
whatnot. Yeah, it was nice to see that. Move over to the center position for a second, because I think this bears discussion. The Tyler Linderbaum situation is very much in flux from my perspective. They have to make a decision by May 2nd on whether or not to give him his fifth-year option, to pick up his fifth-year option, which would be a big nut of money. I think it's about $23.4 million they have to pay Linderbaum. or commit to him for 2025. I don't see any for 26. I don't see any way the Ravens will do that. I think it's out of line with positional value. And I don't think you want to put Linderbaum in a position where he's got an advantage in the negotiations. It's guaranteed money, so you can't go back on it like the tags, the tenders you can go back on, but you can't go back on the fifth year option. So yeah, I think there's actually a pretty substantial chance that Linderbaum ends up walking if they can't get this deal done, probably before the regular season begins. I think the reason my thinking being that every week that goes by during the regular season, injury risk is coming off the table for Linderbaum, and it becomes less likely that the team can come to an agreement based on some divisible benefit of the risk that remains.
Yeah, I think, I mean, everybody always talks about Kyle Hamilton's extension and, you know, that number that keeps growing and growing and growing. But I think this is one that also needs to be talked about because of how important Linderbaum is in the middle of that offensive line. You know, he's out there, he's Lamar's eyes and ears pre-snap. So it's definitely high priority. And like you said, typically they really don't like to pay top dollar for those guys as far as the interior is concerned. So it's going to be a philosophical shift if they do give him top dollar at that position. But we've seen them do it when they actually took him in the first round because they've never done that before.
You're right. I mean, they used the 25th overall pick, and that was a pick where they immediately basically tossed the value of the fifth-year option away by picking him there. So you normally think, oh, like we got a first-round pick, and it's Adafi Owe or somebody. We might not be completely happy with the way he's played during his rookie contract, but he's still a bargain in terms of the fifth-year option cost. A player like Linderbaum, he basically makes left-tackle money in his fifth year, which is because all offensive linemen are grouped together and the top ones are the ones that are considered, and those are all left tackles. So you basically are pricing Linderbaum out of Baltimore with that. It's a big reason not to take anything but a complete franchise changing player at a non-value position. Now they got that with Hamilton. They got a player who provides them that and is completely worth the fifth year option. Even if they had gotten Creed Humphrey, say in a different draft in the first round, I don't think that they'd be all that eager to be paying $23.4 million to him in the fifth year.
Yeah, definitely not in the fifth year. But if they can, like you said, if their priority is to extend him, I think that's the goal. That's the plan. That's what you want to mm-hmm. do. But you don't want to be paying him that top, you know, like you said, lumped up with just the left tackles. You don't want to be paying that top money for just that 1 year. You want to be able to have him for the long haul.
Okay, fair enough. Daniel Fa'alele, improvement at the end of the season as I score it. I think he's all but a given as the incumbent at right guard. I know not everybody's happy about that. You know, a lot of people look at him and he does not pass the eye test if you're not scoring the game, is all I can say. He's a lumbering kind of a slow-footed guy. There's limitations to his play in some very significant ways. And I'm watching the same tape you all are. It's just that the differences I could tell you is the reduction in penalties, basically the turning off the false on penalties was a very big deal. He's actually very effective as a pass blocker, even though it's a complete triumph of function over form. So it's like watching, there's a Hulk Hogan ice skate or something. You wouldn't expect that to be pretty, and it isn't. But he's still an effective right guard at this point, in particular if you look at those last five games.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he got a little bit better as the season went on. The question is how much can he grow? And you know, obviously, confidence is a big part of a player, any player, no matter what the position is. And he's going to be coming in with, you know, a massive amount of confidence, you know, getting the Pro Bowl alternate vote, which, you know, that would make anybody feel good. So the fact that he has that mentally should give him, you know, just kind of that that head start that you need rolling into the season, where you have that confidence, where you know you belong, you know you can play this game. But will he be up to the standard that, you know, most folks would like to see? That's yet to be seen. Can he improve? That's yet to be seen. But I do like the strides that he made, but I would also like to see the team add someone else there just to, I mean, let's not be complacent. You know, let's try to get the best five that we can out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's perfectly reasonable. And I think that they'd be fools not to improve their depth at all over the offensive line. They've got six guys right now. You can add Samak to that and maybe say they have seven, but they need at least a nine to make eight roster. I don't think Samak's position is secure. And probably they need to really be thinking about 10, which would mean drafting a tackle for sure, a swing guy probably, and then another pure guard or a guard center as well, as I would say. Does it match your thoughts?
Yeah, and like you said, when we started off, you know, 2024, that's not the norm when it comes to offensive line help. Mm-hmm. So they were pretty damn deep when you look at the roster, where they had Josh Jones, who can play left tackle, he can play guard, he can play right tackle. They had Makari, who could play all over the line. They had Ben Cleveland. So they had these depth pieces, but this season, like you said, the cupboard is empty. So you have to restock that with cheap and versatile pieces.
All right, completely agree with that. Well, let's move forward. Let's jump in and talk about do our 10-1 countdown. Please tell us who your number 10 interior offensive lineman is.
My number 10 is Jackson Slater out of Sacramento State. I really like, once you put on his tape, you can see the flexibility that he has, the mobility in his game. I really do like that. I like players, especially offensive linemen, who kind of have that hip flexibility, that ankle flexibility, because a lot of the guys you see are very stiff. They don't move well in space, but him, he was a really solid mover, and you can see that he had that kind of left tackle skill set as far as the movement is concerned. You can tell he played left tackle before. Moving inside, obviously, he was able to utilize that on pulls and just getting into space. I thought he did a good job of getting under defenders, and not just getting under them and having that leverage, but also getting under them and driving his legs. A lot of times you see blockers where they'll be latched onto somebody and they just stop. They just want to wrestle the guy. He keeps his legs turning. And I really do like that, because that shows that somebody, he's playing to the echo of the whistle. He's not just content with making contact and that's it, getting in the guy's way. He wants to finish the play. He wants to make sure that his guy isn't the one making the play. And I love that in a player. Obviously, he doesn't have the highest pedigree coming out of Sacramento State. You know, he's not the strongest guy in the world, but he is, you know, one of those try-hard, lunch pail type of players. And you know, I think he's somebody who can carve themselves out a nice little role as a backup guard, maybe even center.
Okay, so number 10 on your list. He's on my honorable mention list, and I wouldn't have any problem with the Ravens draft him 6, a 7, a UDFA. Is that the range you're thinking, or even a little higher for him?
I was thinking like 5, 6 maybe.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll go through my thoughts on him here. He's got an injury flag on him. He had a knee injury, ended his 24 season after 9 games. He had a hamstring injury doing his 40 at the combine, which I'm actually not sure is not a good thing, because it kind of means he's back from his knee injury that he's running the 40 at the combine at all. So at least that you've got that positive. Has a very positive athletic profile across the board. Good across the board. I won't say very positive, but he's a 5'0" 140 guy, so he can move. He certainly would be a guy who could take the left guard role, I think, well. 32-inch arms are not a huge problem inside. Obviously, he's not going to play tackle with 32-inch arms, but it's a little bit of a disadvantage in pass blocking to be short-armed like that. He's penalized 8 times in 3,195 college snaps. So it's one every 399.4. I'm going to try and give you that for every lineman we have here, because it's a very significant component of value. And it's under... underweighted by PFF. So if you ever look at PFF grades, they won't capture the full impact of penalties well. And one every 399.4 is excellent and is one of the better ones in the class, even at any offensive line position, although guards generally have less than tackles in terms of penalties. Talk about his blocking a little bit. From a pass blocking situation, I think he has some problems striking that relate to his length that often cause him to lose balance. So he gets a little over his feet. I didn't really like that part. He has a solid anchor technique, has a reverse CUC, but he really doesn't have that ideal mass to anchor well. So he ends up being a slow death on a lot of plays. It's not the worst situation to be in, but it's not ideal. I think at the level he's played at Sacramento State, he's made do with the physical limitations versus lesser competitions. The NFL will effectively be a double jump for him. So the first jump would be to a Power 5 conference, the second jump to an NFL, and it will be a big adjustment for him. He won't be a day one starter, in my opinion. I'm sure you probably feel the same way. But one thing that's nice about him is he kind of bails out his tackle, I think, fairly regularly, and that's good. I like to see that when a guy looks for work, and if he's got the guard bubble, particularly on his side, he'll go outside and try and knock the shoulder and really help out his tackle. There are some – a guard can occasionally be very unhelpful in that regard. He'll knock somebody loose from a block that's locked on, or he's effectively got the guy neutralized, and then all of a sudden the pass rusher gets second life from it. But generally speaking, if that left tackle is losing ground, then a left guard making a help block there is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that with him too. He's a guy who he'll work up, he'll get to the double team, mm-hmm. and he'll be able to analyze and pick up whoever the free rusher is too. So he'll help out as far as the double team goes, but then he'll quickly get off of that guy and then pick up the free man that's rushing. And I love that. That just shows me a guy who's playing with his, trusting his eyes, but also playing cerebrally as well. It's not just the physical game. It's also the mental side of the game too.
Could completely agree, by the way, particularly with regard to Slater, great inside out protection skills. He's thinking and, that is not a high level cerebral skill. It's one that every offensive lineman should have. And one of the guys that I really noticed it with was Ben Cleveland when he was at right guard in Georgia. He worked left to right, and Georgia's extremely well coached, so they're going to get offensive linemen to do the right thing. But I like that too. And when I see it, and people know the order in which they have to process, that's a really positive thing. A couple run blocking things. I think he climbs fairly effectively off combination blocks. Sometimes that's an issue, sometimes it's not, but I think part of it may have been quality of competition. He had a good judgment about when he got the guy off balance at the first level and could leave him for the center, which is the big question. Now they have go codes among those linemen that they're telling each other when to go. So maybe the center is telling him, when he thinks he has it, but one of the guys who has a problem with this is Tyler Linderbaum. Tyler Linderbaum is kind of a bumper when it comes to climbing off combination blocks. He'll give a jolt to try and help the guard to the appropriate side on a combination block and then move to level 2 immediately. You want ideally that the help on your combination block to wait until that defensive tackle is up on 1 foot. And then anybody, pretty much, even a much smaller man, can finish that block. But in the case of Linderbaum, I think he leaves a little bit too early. I didn't see that with Slater. I think his timing is good on that. Mm-hmm. I see a guy who doesn't lunge too much in level 2. I like that. I don't like to see linemen lose their feet in level 2. I think they're often much better. Maintain your length, maintain your kind of your blocking radius, and force the guy to go completely around you. You're better off than lunging, missing usually, and creating an opportunity for that smaller defender. And they had one more thing. I think his pulling seems pretty smooth. Get off is pretty good. Did not seem to have a footwork issue that I can see. And at that level, you wouldn't know if there was a problem. A footwork problem could occur, and it could be known, but you wouldn't be sure that he would do that well, is what I'm trying to say, that you wouldn't be sure that he'd be as well coached as at another level, but arrives with a pop too on his pulls. And that'll obviously, depending on level, he'll do that well. I think that's a matter of timing your last footstep to hit that. that player that you're coming to in the hole or through the hole. And he does, I thought, a pretty good job with that.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's just, you know, just a gritty, grinded out type of player who, you know, like you said, he's fleet footed and he, to me, he's a guy who you really want to have him on the move in order to really maximize what he can do as far as just being able to pull and get out in space.
With the amount of zone blocking that the Ravens do, and the other thing question would be the size that they've maybe struggled with a little bit with Linderbaum and pass blocking this last year, having McCary next to him. Does he represent an ideal left guard for the Ravens, or would they look for a bigger player, or would they prefer to have more mobility?
I mean, for me, I'm hoping that they go for the bigger body. It's a big man's game. You know, you can be as technically sound as you want. You can, you know, be as fast as you want, but there are going to be games where you just have to line up and move people off the ball. And we saw the Eagles do it for over a decade where they had Jason Kelce and they always had two huge guards right next to him just to protect him. And I think it would be smart for the Ravens to take a page out of that book and be able to put those kind of guys around Linderbaum.
They are, in fact, able to do that right now if they'll just put Ben Cleveland in at left guard, because Falele already meets the standard.
I mean, physically, yes, they do have that, but skill-wise, they do not have it yet.
Okay. All right. So this won't be the last time you hear this, but Jackson Slater is one of the players that I like as a plan B in case Tyler is not re-signed. So a guy who could jump in 2026 and play center for the Ravens. And he's played all over the line. I think he may even have some snaps at center in his career at Sacramento. So hopefully that's a thing that the Ravens won't have to address. But if they do, then you want to have options. And I think he would be one.
Right.
All right, let's go into my number 10 guy. That's Tyler Cooper, the guard out of Minnesota. Let me get back on my notes on him. 6'6", 302, 32 and a half inch arms, a 5'15 in the 40s is just right in the average range. That was done at his pro day, so it is suspect. I don't have an age on this guy. He did play 4 years in school, so he's probably 22, but I don't know for sure. He's a plus athletic profile. He's kind of similar to Connor Colby in terms of his frame and length limitations for a guard. So Connor Colby will be on this list too, I'm sure, for both of us. Only has 21 college starts, had an injury history. Then in 23 and 24, he lost time in both years. That's a big red flag and obviously something that will reduce his spot on this list for me anyway. Nice low penalty rate, 4 and 1,325 college snaps. That's one every 331 and a quarter. That's very good for a guard, but it's not quite at the top of the list. And all four of those penalties came in 2024. So hopefully they get that cleaned up. Kind of a balanced pass and run blocker guy. I definitely much prefer the guys who pass block first and run block second. So if you're a great pass blocker and a meh run blocker, that's a hell of a lot better than being a good at both. Because it's a pass blocking game. That's the more important high leverage thing that offensive linemen do. And we've also seen, I think, the fact that Lamar Jackson can run behind just about any offensive line in terms of what you present to them. Lamar Jackson and Henry are the juice that creates players being out of position rather than the lineman moving them out of position for him. So I'm a big fan of pass blocking over run blocking in terms of valuation. I'll stop there for a second, give you a chance to make a comment. Then I have some comments on his blocking.
Yeah, no, I'm with you as far as the pass blocking. And I think that's going to be a common theme as we go on with this list, because I took that similar approach too, where I'm putting more of the premium on pass blocking than actual guys who can, you know, move the pile in a run game. I agree with what you said. It's a passing league, you know, and I feel like I would trust an offensive line coach to kind of get the best that he can out of someone when it comes to the run game, rather than trying to fix somebody in pass pro.
Yeah, that's a great point. And particularly the Ravens have had with Joe D, outstanding run blocking coaching. I think generally offensive line coaching. I hope that they still have that. Warhop had a great second half to the year, getting the penalties shut down. At some point, I hope they put him out there for an interview and I get a chance to ask him, you know, just how do you deal with that as a point of emphasis kind of thing. But it was a fairly remarkable turnaround for the offensive line that happened exactly at the same time that they got the secondary fixed. It just literally the same game. It was 10 games of not good play. And then the remainder of the season, they had really low penalty totals. So great job by him.
Yep.
Let's go back to Cooper for a second. Lean frame, short arms, obviously not ideal. 32 and a half is not terrible or anything. It's okay. Maintaining leverage has been an issue for him. He's a decent knee bender, but one of the problems with maintaining leverage is you need to maintain your hands on the opponent. And you notice the lock on players and you attribute it often to grip strength. He might be a low grip strength guy. He might be not the greatest hand fighter, but whatever the reason, he's not able to lock on and maintain blocks as well as some of the other guy. Has a bad habit of taking his man 12 to 6. This is a big bugaboo, by the way. I hate this in guards. Guards or centers. You cannot, there's too much injury risk involved. You cannot take your block 12 to 6 behind your own offensive tackle. I absolutely hate seeing that. And you look at, well, he's maintaining his block. Well, no, he put his left tackle at risk. He might get his legs falling on, and then you're done for the season all of a sudden. It's a very bad habit. It's a big no-no, and it's something I saw him do more than once, so that's something that's bad. He's not a natural knee bender. A decent knee bender. I already went over that. He's an effective processor, I think, as far as the stunts and blitzes. Nothing special there. Run blocking, he's out of his stance quickly on pulls. I did like that. I thought he had problems with displacement, and I would expect that given that he's just a smaller, thin frame, 6'6 guy. I don't really expect a lot of displacement from any offensive lineman. I expect him to be able to handle the back end of a double team or be able to help get the defensive tackle off balance so that somebody else can handle the back end and then climb. His climbing is fine. His footwork as a puller is good. I think as a run blocker, he's going to be fine in terms of whether he's climbing or left behind on combination blocks. So I don't really have anything negative to say. It's just, the frame is not ideal, and some of his ability to keep his hands on his opponent were not things that I found ideal, but definitely a guy who, by the way, needs time in an NFL weight room. A lot of functional strength gain is required.
Yeah, I agree. I was, as far as a fit with the Ravens, I didn't really see the fit with him. It was, to me, he's a guy you want to keep him in a phone booth. You know, you want to protect him like that. And you want him in a, let's say, with the Chargers, let's say, you know, where you're going to be more of that power scheme and you know, you're going to have to, obviously, Roman, he utilizes pullers too, which, you know, Cooper has done. Cooper does a good job of. But as far as being able to play in a zone type of scheme, I didn't like that fit at all for him. I thought he was way better when he was just able to play in that phone booth. And just like you said, he's not great at any one thing. He's just a steady Eddie. You know, he can pass block, he can run block, but he's not a guy who he has any type of overwhelming trait where that's his trump card, you know. And as far as the Ravens, I want somebody who's going to elevate the room, not who's going to just be a steady Eddie.
All right, fair enough. For in the case of Cooper, did you have him in your honorable mention in your top 10? Where'd you have him?
He was on my honorable mention.
Okay. And I have him I'd be okay with him as a sixth round pick. You know, the Ravens have three picks in that round. They have two more in round seven. There's probably guys that they can get as a UDFA, but I do have the feeling that Cooper will be drafted. So if the Ravens want him to be part of it, part of their 2026 squad, they're going to need to take him in probably in the sixth round. Would you have a problem with that?
It depends who's on the board, because there are other players who I like, you know, quite a bit more than him. So it all depends who's on the board.
All right, let's move to your number 9 guy.
My number nine guy is, so let me preface this by saying I like him if this is just a overall list for the NFL, not Ravens specific. So my number nine guy is Marcus Bowe.
Okay.
I like his skill set. I like what he can do. It sounds like I hate him because he's at number nine, but I don't hate him. I just hate the fit with the Ravens because, like we said, he's a guy played right tackle, gonna have to move inside. And the concerns that I have with him, it would just not fit well with next to Tyler Linderbaum, because the deficiencies that Linderbaum has are similar to the deficiencies that Marcus Bowe has. But in my eyes, Bowe's are way more glaring than Linderbaum's ever were. Now, the good part with Bowe's game is he's just, you see him out there and he moves like he's a tight end. He very good lateral agility, gets to the second level easily. Like, it's almost effortless the way that he gets up there. Times and uses his hands really well when attacking defenders. Oh, his hands are always active. You'll see him in pass pro sets, and his hands, he's just like, you know, like he saw Mr. Miyagi, like wax on, wax off. He's just he's probably some of the best hands in this draft as far as just being able to get to defenders' hands and attacking them and not letting them get into him. Now the bad part with him is just that he lacks that functional strength. And too many times he's able to just get blown off the ball, and he can't get any movement when it comes to trying to run block or anything like that. And it's something that can be improved, obviously, because, you know, you get him in an NFL weight room, you get some, you know, quote unquote grown man strength on him. And, you know, obviously that can be helped, but is it something where you can depend on him being, you know, a top level guard if you're taking him in the third round or something like that? Because if I'm taking someone in the third round, I don't really want questions about power and being able to anchor. I want somebody who can have a you know, at least a baseline of power. You don't have to be the most powerful guard in the world, powerful player in the world, but just have that base level of strength to you. And with him, to me, that's just a glaring red flag. Now, if he can improve that, if he can get better at it, then yeah, he's a ball of clay right now that is exciting. But just as far as the Ravens fit, I didn't like it, even though I like the player.
Okay. All right. I love Marcus Bowe, by the way. And he's a guy that I took off my tackle list and moved him over. I have him at the number four guy on my list. I wouldn't disagree with some of the things you've said about him, but I want to start with some of the things that are good in terms of the really active hands. There's a lot of guys on this particular draft that have a wrestling background. If you're a Baltimore Ravens fan, the first player you may think of is Kelly Gregg, who got by with very short arms, but was a great hand fighter, great leverage player, got low, got underneath the pads of a lot of offensive linemen to create a lot of problems for them. I think Bowe has some of that. He's 6'4", 303, which is small for a guard. Certainly 32-inch arms are in the sixth percentile at offensive tackle. Which is terrible, obviously, but he doesn't really test well in any particular area. So I see some of the problems there. He also had a ton of penalties in college. Now, a lot of those are accumulated at tackle. In fact, most of them were accumulated at tackle, but it's still one every 116.4 is way too many for a draftable prospect. And I think that's going to be something they have to overcome at the next level. I had some things I did like about him, though, too. The independent hand usage is just terrific. You see him making do with shorter arms in a way that's very positive. I mean, a guy like him at 32-inch arms, he shouldn't be playing tackle at all. And yet he could do it and do it pretty effectively at Purdue. His kick step is very good. So he's a guy, I wouldn't keep him around because I want to play him a tackle, but I might keep him around because I could have him as a swing guard tackle. And I think he's one of the guys in this draft that I think could end up literally at any offensive line position. He could probably not at left tackle, but any of the other four, I think he could end up at. And that would be, it's a very interesting player. It's always intriguing to add that kind of versatility to your team. I haven't seen him play center yet. Obviously, that would be a step in a different direction from what's going on. But I mean, a guy with that arm length is going to be taken away as a weakness if you put him at center.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
In frame, kind of makes sense there, and he kind of undersized us, and you're going to really appreciate his hand fighting there, and he'll help you. If he can get his hands on the inside of combination blocks, then he can be left behind on them, and he can also be very effective getting pushed, because you don't need to be Ben Cleveland or Daniel Fa'alele to down block effectively or be the guy who pushes someone onto one leg. You just have to be the second man and be good about knowing where to put your hands, and I think Bo has that. He didn't have a good trend of OL grading as PFF had it. Didn't have a good trend of penalties either, for that matter. Doesn't have a great anchor. And so we're seeing some things that are not ideal. You mentioned the getting to level two, getting on the move. The getting to level two thing, the thing I love about him is how decisive he is. So, okay, give me a little bit of background into how I score offensive line play. When I go through it, there's a really common notation that's L2NB that shows up on the sheet. Move to level two, did not make a block. So what that means. Very often there's a block to be made, and sometimes it requires effort, and oftentimes it requires just recognition. So decisiveness of, I want to block that guy, and then go move in that direction. Ronnie Stanley, he just goes all out a lot of the time and tries to find someone to block, even if it's 20 yards down the field. And that's the kind of block that changes 10-yard runs into 30-yard runs. And you really want to make sure you have guys who are high-effort guys running down the field. I know the Ravens scouts must absolutely love that. And Bo is a guy who will give you that, I think. The other thing I think he does, he lines up blocks very well in level two and arrives on time. Okay, so that's a matter of getting your steps right such that your weight is delivered onto that level two target. And I think he does a good job of that. Doesn't give up his power with lunging is another way to say that same thing. If you're lungy, you're probably the opposite of what I've just described. So I think he's a very reasonable candidate for a tackle to guard conversion in the NFL. And he also, by the way, guard to tackle. He could be a guy who comes to the NFL, starts a year at guard at one spot, and then moves back to tackle. That's typically reserved for, you know, Jonathan Ogden types who were anointed as tackles in college. But in his case, I think it could be a case where he moved back to right tackle if that's what the Ravens needed it. So as far as being a tackle, he's only a right tackle. As far as being a guard or a center, I think he could be any of the positions. His arm length is not totally suited to right guard, but I think he'd be fine with the movement skills for left guard. And I think he could be a guy that even would replace Linderbaum at center. We'd have to see some things, but you know, the climbing, the decisiveness in level two are great center attributes to be had. So I like them. I like them a lot more than you did, but those are my thoughts.
Yeah. And as far as the fit with the Ravens, where would you slate him if, let's just say, he was picked by them?
Yeah, if he's going to play in the first year, I'd prefer it be at left guard. Mm-hmm. And I think he's got the mobility to do it. I think he basically is a good complement to Fa'alele, who is a pure power player. It doesn't really address the Ravens' left A-gap weakness in terms of how you bomb that with bodies and you get some overwhelmed pass blockers in those two spots. But I think it gives you the mobility you want to run your counters and to run all the pulls the Ravens do, which is a really high percentage of run plays.
Okay. Yeah. I and as far as value, I'm with you. I think he's a third rounder.
Yeah.
I actually have him higher. Well, I have him going higher than the two guys who I have ahead of him.
Okay.
Because I know that there are going to be teams that are going to fall in love with that skill set and can use a guy like that. It's just like we said in the beginning, this is just Ravens lens, just trying to look at it through what they need and what will complement the players that they already have.
Would you be happy with him at 91?
Again, it depends who's there. That's a cop out answer, but it depends. Like,
maybe I better just preface that to say, would you think he'd be a value pick at 91? If he's the guy on the board you'd like, because that's really the question, is would you see him as value at 91?
Not at 91, maybe okay. Maybe in the fourth, but okay. I do think he's for another team. Yeah, he would be there, you know, for the third round. But for the Ravens, I wouldn't like it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I wouldn't hate it.
So Bo was your number nine guy. We'll go to my number nine guy really quickly. I'm going to pick up the pace on this a little bit because we're kind of dragging in, although this discussion is great. I got to appreciate you, Chris, so much. Connor Colby, number 77, the guard for Iowa, is my next one. 6'6", 309, 32-inch arms. Seems to be a very common problem is short-armed guards in this draft who have, you know, tall, lean frames. They aren't built in the gourd-like fashion, the pear shape that you typically like from guards. Colby will did turn 22 in January, has plus athletic testing. So that's nice. Nice, very fast shuttle at 463 among those. Penalized just one time in 743 snaps in 24. College, a total, it's one every 467.2. That's excellent. One of the best. He did struggle as a pass blocker in his first 3 years at Iowa, had a solid season in 24, which means he's probably a better run blocker than pass blocker, and that's not the good combination. So we talked about that earlier. We don't need to go into it again. As a pass blocker, I'd say processing is a good asset as a pass blocker. The lean frame, the short arms are detriments. Probably stands up a little bit too much for me. Guy that the defensive tackles under his pads just all too often, walking him back into the quarterback or walking him back and even imperiling the cone. So the quarterback can't step into his throw normally. When I look at run blocking, I say combination blocks are effective. His processing is very good as a run blocker as well. And this is kind of akin to decisiveness. He stays on the move and finds someone to hit. The stays on the move is a slight addition to this. It's something I attribute to a Raven of the past, Vontae Leach, as a fullback, did a wonderful job of conserving his momentum by having a preference to take blocks where he didn't have to U-turn and lose it, but take a, you know, 20 or 30 degree angle to take a player that was further down the field. So I like seeing that. And that's something I would ascribe to Colby as well here. I think he moves well on pulls, level two assignments. I don't think there's too many guards in this entire group that are like Ben Cleveland was, say, that really have some displacement value. He's not one of them. So he's a guy you have, if you want to move somebody, you have to do it by combination block. You're not going to do it by one man alone. He played right guard at Iowa. I think his skill set screams out left guard in the NFL. His arm length does, because you really want the longer arms in order to torque and lock onto that defender at right guard. He's a guy who moves well, and they a team should take advantage of that and move him to left guard, I would say. The Ravens love Iowa linemen, and they love particularly the smart ones. I would not be surprised if he has a red star on the Ravens board somewhere. And if he's available in round six or even at the end of round five, I've been mistakenly saying the Ravens don't have a fifth round pick, but they do have the last pick of round five. They just have a big gap between their round four and round five pick. I would be fine with that. He would not be an economical pick in round four, but I'd be perfectly happy with the last pick in round four, five being used on him.
Yeah, and I think that's really the range where you'll probably see a player like him go. Like you said, all of your notes that you have, I agree with completely. Like you can't see me, but I was shaking my head when you okay. when you were reading them off, because it was almost word for word. You know, obviously the run blocking is it's impressive with the run blocking skills that he has. Not an overly powerful guy, but you know, just enough power where you know he's going to be able to do his job. Not a guy that you have to worry about at all when it comes to that strength in the run game, but as far as pass pro, it was the other side of the spectrum where he just looked a little bit lost. He didn't really seem to be as comfortable as, you know, the guy who we were just speaking about before, Marcus Bowe, where Marcus Bowe, that's just, you know, a fish in water when it comes to pass pro. And with Kobe, it was just it wasn't like that at all. It was kind of a fish out of water. To say the least, but you know, he does have the skill set that you know you can build off of. But like you said, it would definitely be back end of the draft type of pick to get someone like this who will probably be a developmental backup kind of guard for you.
To 2026 at the earliest, he'd be a starter.
Yeah, at the earliest, yeah.
Okay, all right. Let's move on. Who's your number eight guy?
My number eight guy is a tackle, Emory Jones. I think Emory Jones is a guy who, coming into this year, I do a summer scouting article, and I really loved him, along with the other LSU guys. And I don't know what happened in 2024, but it just all crumbled down. And, you know, some of the bad things as far as just getting playing sloppy, getting over their feet. They just weren't playing together. I don't know what happened, but you know, Emory Jones was part of that issue. He didn't have the season that a lot of people thought he was going to have, including myself. I thought he was going to be a first round pick, no doubt about it. You know, now we're here, you know, 7 months later, and I think his best spot will be on the inside. He's a guy who came in similar path as Will Campbell. Came in freshman, day one, won the starting right tackle job. He's been there ever since. So, you know, those two guys have come on for LSU and played since they were freshmen. So, you know, that's a big accomplishment within itself. But with him, he's more of that power base. He's looking to make contact first and use his aggressiveness on defenders. He's not playing passive. He's not waiting for the defender to make contact. He wants to get to the defender first. And with that, it can cause him to be a little bit frenetic with his movement. And then with that freneticness that he has and kind of being antsy and overzealous, it causes him to get unbalanced. And you can see him sometimes just completely miss his target. And that's something that you saw more in 2024 than you saw in 2023. I believe in 2023, he played under control just a bit more. And to me, that's what I'm trying to bank on is the 2023 tape. Now, obviously, the 2024 tape is there. So you can't just throw that away and say, all right, that doesn't count because he had a good 2023 season. No, it's all baked in. But to me, I think if you move him in on the inside, I believe that aggressiveness that he plays with, that violence that he likes to play with, I think that is something that can be cultivated on the inside. And it can really bring his ceiling, you know, higher than it would just being at right tackle, because I don't think he's going to last at right tackle. Now, can he give you some flexibility in case somebody gets hurt and play right tackle? Yeah, of course. You know, 6'6", 335. yeah, he has the length, he has the build, but I just think you can see a similar situation where a team can take him and move him on the inside, kind of like you saw with the Eagles and Mekhi Becton, where you take that bigger body type who plays aggressive. He doesn't really have that tackle mentality. He has more of that guard mentality, that mauler mentality. And I think moving him on the inside would do him justice and also the, whichever team drafts him justice.
I think that's a great set of points there on Jones. He's still on my tackle group, which I went over with James Ogden yesterday. And Emory Jones, we didn't have a big disagreement over him, but he's number 14 for me, and he's on the honorable mention list for James as well. I have him as a fourth or fifth round draft pick, but one of the notes I have is pear shape is ideal for guard. He's really more of that. He does not have a real natural mirror for the outside. So in a sense, he was already playing out of position at LSU to play offensive tackle. So it's easy to see how he'd do better moving to guard, even though he has all the length necessary to play tackle at 34 1/4 inches. To me, he's probably a right guard in the NFL, would make a lot of sense. Open the gate. He's got the length and lock on ability. Did not like his hand usage. That was one of my big knocks on him. He's a lot of violence in his hand, but not a lot of alternating strikes. It's a lot of trying to go two-handed grips in the beginning. He could go via the neck and into the armpit a lot, but it's a lot of two-handed action that I don't like. I like to see players who mix it up, because I think you give the opponent a lot more difficulty trying to figure out how to get by you and how to execute their own plan if you're not doing two-handed strikes like that. What else to say? He's kind of lungy in space. That's something they could probably coach out of him. It means he's not arriving on time is what that effectively means. And he feels like he has to give himself up to try and knock over a smaller man. He creates some very nice highlights as a combination blocker. And since his action is a tackle, I'm watching him there. You know, he's crashing down on the guy that the right guard is blocking, and he's driving into kingdom come. Mm-hmm. That's pretty, but it's not really what you should be doing. Just get the guy off balance, let the right guard finish and get the highlight block and the pancake that goes with that. I don't even consider it a pancake when there's two people involved, but you understand what I'm saying. And get to level two. And as a right tackle on a right-handed play, on a play going to the right, getting up that half level is very important in order to seal that scraping linebacker and create a lot more space for your back. That's an area where I think he was kind of falling down in his right tackle responsibility. So I'd like him to do that. Penalty rate is very high at one every 136.6. Of course, that's at tackle, so I would expect it to be more, and it's in the SEC, so I kind of understand. But it's an area where he needs to get better. Also, he's a guy who's short on functional strength, and that needs to improve. He's a big guy. Has all the size you'd want, but he's in terms of really getting strength that means something on the field. You know, he's 6'5". I have him at 315. I heard you say 335, but you know, a lean frame and a guy who really needs more mass in his guns and honestly more mass in his thighs as well, I would like to say.
Yeah, I saw that big pair build that you mentioned earlier. I saw that with him too, and it's something that, you know, obviously playing tackle, you don't want to have that pear shape, you know. Mm-hmm. So going on in on the inside, I don't know if he just gained a bunch of weight and in 2024, but in 2023, he just looked slimmer. He looked stronger. Like you said, the guns looked a little bit bigger. So I don't know what happened in 2024, but he physically didn't look like he did in 2023.
All right. Let's move on here. I'm going, my number eight guy is Dylan Fairchild of Georgia. All the Georgia interior offensive linemen made my list, but Fairchild, let me get that out of my notes on him here. 6'5", 318, 33 inch arms. That's nice and long for a center. No problem with that. Turns 22 in May. He had a good broad jump. So he's got a little bit probably of explosiveness that's in his game. Penalized four times at 876 snaps in his final season at Georgia's, a little too high at one every 219. But he's the best possible combination of a good run blocker who is a great pass blocker. And, of course, that's what I want to see. In terms of pass blocking, he's got that plus length for a guard. He anchors well. Another former wrestler who I think does a really good job. being able to get his hands to the inside of the frame of his opponent where they can do more good. So his arm length is just fine, but other players, they often have to make up for their weaknesses by making sure they do that. He's got a little bit of leeway, but he still does it quite well. Uses his hands independently. He does not club with both flippers at the same time, like a bad pinball player. I think he's okay with stunt and blitz recognition. The Georgia interior offensive linemen work together so well to deny stunt and blitz traffic that I think that I don't know if I'm ascribing that to the person or to the coach, but they're very good at it. I think in terms of run blocking, he prioritizes getting to level two on combination blocks, and he's a little bit of a popper, a little bit of a pusher, as opposed to really waiting to get the guy off balance. That's my one complaint about him. My major complaint is a run blocker. Lines up blocks pretty well in level two, whether he's climbing or screening. I thought he's one of the pretty good screen blockers in this class. His get off and footwork, pace of his pulls, all good. Happy with that. And he likes to maintain and finish blocks, maybe to a fault, that he doesn't always maintain his feet on such blocks. And oftentimes your feet and your position have even more value than trying to get a block. The other thing, than to get a pancake. But the other thing that you'll see from really talented offensive linemen who often will line up a triple on the same play instead of just, you know, a block at a combination block at level one, then a block in level two. Ronnie Stanley, Marshall Yanda, really top end linemen, they'll make a combination block at level one. They'll get to level two and they'll knock somebody off their track. They'll realize they're out of the play and they'll look for another block. And those are the highlight reels. Those are the ones that go in the highlight reel you want to show your grandchildren. We're going to only have about 45 seconds worth of tolerance for watching your crap. But when you have that, that's a really nice thing to have on tape. Anyway, I like Dylan Fairchild. I think he'd be a good value in round six for the Ravens. And I think also he's a guy who could be a Linderbaum replacement in 26 if the Ravens can't work it out with him.
Yeah, I like his build. I like the demeanor that he plays with. You know, you mentioned the wrestling background. He was undefeated as a junior and a senior in high school. He went 67-0 and was the wrestling state champion in Georgia. So, you know, we love that wrestling background for offensive linemen. We know everybody knows the Linderbaum and Tristan Wirfs thing, just, you know, from their high school days. And, you know, I love those guys because they just have that natural understanding of leverage and being able to have that understanding of angles and being able to get under defenders and you know, moving them out of, you know, moving them wherever you want them to be. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that he, you know, definitely shows on tape. And it's one thing to have that skill set, that knowledge, but then you know, you kind of have the cherry on top when it's somebody who also plays with that aggression, with that style of aggression. And you know, Fairchild is somebody, he was just outside of my top 10, but he's a guy who could have easily been in my top 10. I'm a huge fan of his. I like him. I like how he, as far as the physical part of his game, I like the way that he moves. I thought he played with a lot of explosiveness, which you don't really see a lot on the inside. To me, there are some guys who are just coming out of their stance and it's just, you know, ho-hum coming out of their stance and, you know, doing their assignment. But him, he comes out of his stance with a certain kind of ferocity that I like. You know, he's kind of just, you know, in the movies when the big mean high school player, he's like, I'm going to kill you. I can't wait to get my hands on you. It's you kind of feel that with him where he's just like, he wants to get his hands on the defender. So yeah, he was somebody that I liked, even though he wasn't on my top 10, he was one of my honorable mention guys.
I think it's really good that there's some differentiation between our lists, and I'm going to look forward to that on draft night and think about the guys that you had on your list and I didn't have on mine that, might be the next, Rosengarten here. So yeah. Who's your number seven guy?
My number seven guy is actually another tackle. It is Jalen Rivers from Miami.
Did not scout him. Very good. I want to hear this.
So he split his time between left guard and left tackle this year. He was mostly a left tackle during his time at Miami. He has 1,242 snaps at left tackle, 850 snaps at left guard throughout his whole time in Miami. To me, he has that pear-shaped build that you were talking about. Has really long arms. He has the arms that would typically go with a tackle. I believe they're 34 plus. Hold on one second.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, they're 34 and 7/8. So, you know, he has, you know, a lot of length to him. But, you know, he's just a guy. He's not, you see the 324 pounds or 319 pounds. It depends where you look. But he's not a guy who's going to move people out of the way, but he does just enough in the run game. Where, to me, where he excels is his ability to mirror as far as pass pro, mainly on the interior. I don't really like him at tackle. To me, he's like the poor man's Donovan Jackson. If you can't get Donovan Jackson in the first round or two, this is the discount version of Donovan Jackson, where I think you'll get a guy who's going to be on the interior, but like we kind of saw with the Bengals this year, where they had to play Cody Ford out at tackle in situations like that, where a guy like Jalen Rivers could kick out and be your tackle if you need it. But to me, him in pass blocking, I loved his ability to just be able to match and mirror defenders. His ability to recover on the inside particularly is, to me, that's the thing that I love the most when it comes to offensive linemen, is your ability to recover. And mm-hmm. and on the inside, he did a really good job of that in pass pro. He anchors really well. He's not going to let guys, you know, just get into him and he's going to walk back into the quarterback. We know how important that is for interior pass protectors. And somebody like this, I feel like now we're starting to creep into that world where, yeah, these are the kind of body types that I want next to Linderbaum, where, you know, they're plus at pass pro, you know, not crazy in the run game, but can, you know, you can get by. It's not a major deficiency, like I saw with Bo. But I'm a huge fan of his. He's somebody that when I watched him, I didn't understand why he wasn't getting more love. I don't know if people just want to put him into that tackle bucket, but to me, he's a guy who's a no-brainer at a guard.
Okay. It's a really good one. I did not scout him. I'll give you a few metrics here. He had one penalty every 570 snaps. So that's outstanding, particularly since he picked that up at tackle. PFF scores him as a much better pass blocker than run blocker, as you mentioned. That's you know, the order you certainly want. And the measurables, I did not realize there was somebody sitting out there at tackle at 34 and 7/8 this year, who went, you know, escaped my radar, because I go pretty deep. I go down about the top 25 and looking at this. He does have some sort of an injury flag. He missed the first half of last season. Do you know the nature of that injury?
That I don't know. I don't know what that injury was.
Okay, so he came back and he played. So that's a good sign. He played pretty well. So whatever it was, a hamstring or, you know, some of the soft tissue injury. Hopefully it wasn't particularly serious. All right. Well, I like him. That's somebody I'll be looking for on draft night.
It says he had a knee injury.
Okay. Now I'm less excited.
Well, it wasn't a tear or anything. It was he missed three games.
Okay, so hopefully MCL sprain or something that wasn't terribly. It looks like he missed more games than that. It looks like he missed about 7 weeks. He played in week one, and then he played again in week eight. So I guess he missed 6 weeks, it would be. Oh, all right. All right, let me move on here. If that's okay, we'll go to Luke Kandra, the guard out of Cincinnati. Fair number of things to like about him. Let me get to my notes here, as always, and don't set this up particularly well. Number 67 there. He's 6'5", 319, very short arms, 31 3/4. Plus athletic profile across the board. He's got a whole bunch of pluses, and he's got this very puzzling 833 three cone. I just wonder if he got hurt while he was testing on that, or something went wrong. maybe slipped and fell and had to get up and finish it in an extra second, or not an extra second, but extra half second and change, because that's a terrible number. He played 2 years at Louisville, then two at Cincinnati. His penalties per snap are the lowest I have found for any offensive lineman. One every 1,026 and a half snaps. He had two penalties in 2,053 college snaps. He's got a few things that I'm not really crazy about. As a pass blocker, he's a little slow out of his stance. So he has more reps that I found where his opponent moved first as opposed to him. That's quite unusual, particularly if you're a draftable lineman. And it might be correctable. The guy I kind of remember it being true of was a defensive lineman for the Ravens, Dwan Edwards, had a big problem getting out of his stance. If there's something about penalty avoidance involved in that, and he's obviously avoided penalties tremendously, I'd hate to think he's trying to like continue some streak of not getting penalties and is sacrificing time out of his stance, because that really needs to be corrected. But it's one of the few complaints I have. I think he has a fine anchor versus the bull rush. He has violent hands. He ends a lot of reps early without sacrificing balance. So a real short arm guy could have a lot of problems lunging for lockout reps, going to the armpit, going to the V of the sweater and whatnot. But he doesn't really do that. He doesn't lose enough for that to be a big problem, let me put it that way. So his violent hands does that well. Good inside-out protection skills. We talked about that with some other players. He's looking from the center to the outside and trying to figure out, how do I pick up the next stunt or blitz as is coming, and sequentially working through his responsibilities. In the run blocking, I think he has good get out and get moving skills when he's pulling, nice clean footwork, and he really tries to win the pad level play by play. I don't know that this guy has a wrestling background, but you'd almost predict it would be true based on how effective he is at the pad level game. So he has to do it, by the way, at his length. There's no substitute. He must win pad level at his length. But I think overall he's a good player. I take a chance on the shorter arm length. I keep him inside. I'd want him at left guard based on his mobility, and I think that's where the Ravens would ask him to play. I think he'd be a par pick in round four, meaning that they get him, and there's other players they could choose that are approximately similar, but that they're choosing their need guy. It'd probably be a slight concession to need in round four, and it'd be a value for anything less. But the Ravens don't have a pick between 136, which is near the end of the fourth round, and 176, which is the very last pick of round five. I would project that Kandre gets taken somewhere in there, and the Ravens probably have to trade back or trade up to get him.
Yeah, so he's another guy who was one of those gritty lunch pail type of guys who it might not always look pretty, but he's going to battle his ass off. If he's going to lose, it's going to be slow, and he's going to give you every single ounce that he has in that whatever rep that is, because he's a guy that's going to give you it all. As far as him being a fit for the Ravens, I wasn't a big fan of the fit. I like the player. He was another one who was going to be my honorable mentions. I do like his play style, but as far as the fit with the Ravens, I didn't really see it, because again, he's more of that Mahler phone booth type of guy where you want to protect him. You don't want to really leave him on an island, because if you leave him on an island, it can get ugly. And we know Monken, he wants to be able to just have those five guys and just pass pro and not have any help or anything like that. If he had his preference, that's what he wants. Kandre is just not that. He's not that kind of pass blocker at all. But there is a place for him in the NFL, because it sounds like I don't like him again, but I do like his play style. I just don't like the fit for the Ravens.
All right, we've been through a lot of players here so far, so we're going to cut it off here for the first part of this show. Come back for part two and talk about number 6-1. But Chris, fantastic notes on these individual players. Where can people talk to you online or read your or get look at your work online?
You could just follow me on Twitter at Chris Just Joking, and you can hear me sometimes on the Deep Cover podcast with Michael Crawford and Kerry Stevenson. We pop out every now and then when we feel like it.
Okay, looking for you guys to get more active again. It was something you guys seem to have a good thing going, and then I guess there's always family time constraints or whatnot?
Yeah, we just do it. Whenever we feel like it, that's when we do it. So whenever the bat signal is put out, that's when we go. So we have one actually coming up, right before the draft, something that we do every year. We do a March Madness style bracket where we try to predict the Ravens first round pick. And I think we have like 3 or 4 out of the last 5 years or something like that. So
that's good.
We've done a good job at picking those players. And we do it with James Ogden. We've done it with him. Mm-hmm. When we've done it with Coach Evans as well. So mm-hmm. It's always fun to do those shows and hear what those guys have to say, along with what Kerry and Mike have to say. So those shows are always fun. So we'll definitely be on the lookout for that in the next couple of weeks.
It's kind of like not having a date for New Year's Eve, or, you know, not having a job to do on election night if you're a reporter. If you don't have something to do on draft night, if you don't have something fun to do and you're a draft nut, you're missing out. So great to have you guys producing content. Other folks out there, the thing I'm trying to plug right now is to make sure you join us for the draft watch party. That's will be on all 3 days, every hour of the draft, as we plan to do it. We'll have me, a co-host, other panelists. We'll have a lot of people watching the stream. And then we have a very interactive format where we allow people, whether they're in the stream, on air, whatever, to suggest players. And then we kind of look at them on a spreadsheet basis to see where we would like them picked and whatnot. It's a great discussion, great way to watch a completely Ravens-centric draft experience, and I hope you'll join us for that. Chris, thanks again for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.